This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's podcast is brought to you again by the Friends of the Magic Word, and we want to welcome a new donor and a friend of the Magic Word, Mr. Kent Dickinson. Welcome, Kent, and thanks for joining the group, and I appreciate your support. And also, if you would like to learn how that you can become a friend of the Magic Word and earn some pretty cool perks along the way, just go to themagicwordpodcast.com. There you'll see a tab that will allow you to go and see all the various ways that you can support us in however that you can. And if you can't afford to drop us just a few bucks each month, then perhaps that you can take a few minutes just to go over to the iTunes store, if you are an Apple user, and just give us a 5-star review. And I say 5-star because I had mentioned before that someone had given us a very nice review, but gave us 1-star, thinking that 1 is meaning first, as opposed to 5, meaning, anyhow, you get the idea. The more stars, the better. So if you can, just give a positive review over there. Also, we're getting into the holiday season, which means you're going to be purchasing a lot of things online, and no doubt using Amazon sometime or another, I'm sure. And if you are, please go to the Magic Word Podcast, and at the bottom of every page, there is a big, bold banner there, and just click on that, and that's our affiliate link, and we get just a few pennies out of every one of the purchases that are made through that link. So please help support us that way if you can. Also, what you could do is join our pod letter. We have these each week that gives you an idea of what's going to be coming up that day, which is being released, and also what's coming up next week. And when we have contests, that we announce upcoming contests and remind you of others that are outstanding, that you better hurry and register and that kind of a thing. And a few weeks ago, I mentioned that I would like to consider doing a podcast with some of the magicians who started later in life. I know that there are several out there who are listening to this podcast who didn't get started in the typical way. And I say typical way whenever that you're a youngster and you might have gotten the bug when you were quite young and a preteen, perhaps. But there are some out there who got started later in life. So if you have experienced some sort of magic revelation and the magic bug has bitten you rather late in life, that is not in your teen years, but sometime at a point later, I'd like to hear from you. After I had mentioned that a couple of weeks ago, I got 2 emails from people. So I know that there is some level of interest. I just need to get another half dozen or more people I'd like to hear from. So this way we can try to set up some calls and we can interview you, chat with you, and have you on the Magic Word Podcast and to tell us your story. You don't have to be a professional. That doesn't have to be something that's going to be your goal. It just needs to be something that is your interest and your passion currently, and you didn't get into that until here recently. So I'd like to hear from you. Just drop me an email at scott@themagicwordpodcast.com, and we'll set up something in order to do that. One of the things, too, I would like to mention is that I do get these emails from time to time from people, and I had one here I thought I might clarify because it addresses something that hasn't, I don't think, been addressed over here before. It's kind of interesting. This is from a fellow who's called Doc. He says, Scott, I've been listening to your Magic Word Podcast as I work around the house and the yard, and especially while traveling. I have a question that I haven't heard the answer to in the podcast that I've heard so far. I know your name is Scott Wells, but I'm also hearing Scotty Allen or Scotty L as you sign off at the end of your interviews. Is one a given name and one a performing name? Again, I am enjoying getting to, quote, know such a wide range of performers. Signed, Doc. Well, I understand where the confusion might be, because at the end, whenever I say Scotty out, that's out, O-U-T, that's really kind of an homage to the Star Trek television series when Scotty, who was the engineer for the USS Enterprise, would be on his communication device and would always say, Scotty out. And so that's just what I'm saying. I know it sounds like Scotty Allen or Scotty L, if I just kind of slur those words together, and I apologize for that. But again, I thought I would address that, because if one person is asking the question, that means there are probably several other people out there who are wondering what I am saying at the end of those. So particularly if you are in another country and my dialect may be hard to understand. So it's Scotty out. S-C-O-T-T-W-E-L-L-S-O-U-T. And my real name is Scott Wells. And so, no, I don't go by Scotty really too often. There are a few friends who call me that, but doesn't matter. Call me Scott, call me Scotty. Just call me. So, anyhow, that kind of clarifies that. And I wanted to put that to rest. And one other thing before we get into our conversation with this week's guest is the contest. You know, from time to time, we have contests that we offer some pretty cool prizes. And we've done dozens of these over the years. And we have something this week that is being offered by our guest. And he's going to give us two sets of DVDs of his lecture notes. So those will be available. And I'll tell you on the back end of this podcast how you can enter the contest to win this. And it has $50 value each. So I say each because it's a two set DVD set. So it's there's two of those. So together they're $100 worth. But anyhow, you get the idea. So that's going to be, I'll discuss that on the back end of this podcast. And that again is offered by our guest. And our guest is someone who has been a longtime resident at the Chop House up in the Aspen, Colorado area. And he's been doing thousands of performances in the restaurants and also has worked in comedy clubs as a manager. And he is just a really nice and likable guy and is successful in his career. And you may have heard him perhaps at a lecture or have seen him perhaps, but he doesn't get out a lot because of how hard that he works, particularly during the ski season in the Colorado area. So I want you to I really give a lot of more information about him in my introduction, so I'm not going to be repeating myself in right now. So let me just say, please welcome my guest this week, Mr. Dan Fleshman, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for The Magic Word Podcast.com. And today I have another guest who is a friend of mine, and I'm fortunate that he happened to have a little time off because he's a very busy magician and has been for a long number of years. In fact, that he has been working at the same place, the same restaurant in the Chop House over in Vail, Colorado area for the last 11 years. And so he works there during the summer and the winter ski season. And this gentleman is someone who has also been known for working in comedy clubs and managing them and owning them. He managed the Funny Bone comedy club circuit across the country for a long number of years back when the comedy clubs were a thing, as some of you may recall. And aside from that I just learned today also, we went down to the Magic Island to kind of give him a tour of what's going on down there, that he was actually one of the first magicians to work the first couple of weeks, actually, when the Magic Island first opened for its grand opening back in 1983, I believe it was, along with Scott Hollingsworth and Bill Arnold and a couple other guys. And it was just kind of amazing, you know, I'm sure, for him to walk through and kind of reminisce, having not seen it for such a long time. The gentleman who we're going to be having here then right now just finished lecturing for us here in Houston and has a long history of talking about restaurant magic and performing magic for real people on a regular basis, and has been very successful working because he is a true worker. Got out a new DVD set then also. We'll talk about that later then too. Please welcome my friend, Mr. Dan Fleshman. Hey there, Dan.
Thank you, Scott. Good to be here.
Now I can take a breath. Sorry, there's so much to say about you, you know, that in your young years, you know, for you to have accomplished so much.
Well, I appreciate that. That's very kind. Thank you so much.
And you were in St. Louis, and we're talking, you'd mentioned about DeVoe's Den, Magic
Den. Yeah, DeVoe's Magic Den.
Yeah.
Yes.
What was DeVoe's first name?
Gene.
Gene DeVoe, that's right.
Gene's real last name was Zimmerman.
Zimmerman.
And I didn't know this because one day I was at the magic shop when I was working there, and Gene had to leave for a short time, and the mail arrived.
Yeah.
And this letter said to Gene Zimmerman, and I said to the postman, I said, there's no Zimmerman here. So, and I didn't know that. So I told the postman to take it back. And when Gene came back and I told him, he goes, that's my last name. I had no idea his last name was Zimmerman.
That is funny. And so he had to go track down the postman and say, hey, that's mine.
Well, I think the postman came back and just realized I was some young punk teenage kid that didn't know what he was doing. Right.
So he was really kind of your mentor in getting you started and everything way back when.
Definitely one of my mentors. Harry Monty was one of my mentors as well.
There's a great name. Boy, and the guy still is working and still sharp. We were talking earlier at dinner about him having the, what is the record for the
53
most?
53 years in a row.
Yes, of working the Magic Castle.
Not missed a year. He worked there when it first opened in 1963.
I was going to say, that's been 53 years, so he's been there every year since. Yeah, I don't think anybody could match that record.
No.
Wow. Yeah.
You got to make it that long.
And he was past president, national president of the Society of American Magicians, I believe.
I believe he was. Correct,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
quite a guy. If you guys not ever had a chance to meet him, he does get to conventions sometimes. Mm-hmm. He usually goes to Magic Live
right.
and all that, and he's 90-something now?
I think Harry's only about 82, I think.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah, 82.
Because okay. I know he's in a scooter.
Right,
you know,
right.
He gets
just
around.
Easier for him to get around.
Sure, yeah. Well,
because of his back.
That is really a really great convention. But we were talking about restaurants. Now, going way back whenever that you first started with that one, well, let me go back just a little bit further than that. We're talking about comedy clubs. How did you actually get started and hooked up with the Funny Bone? Were you a comedian that started working the comedy
club? Not at all.
Okay.
I remember going up there to Westport Plaza and meeting Jerry Kubak. And I went in there one day. We just... I was just doing magic, and he hired me to come in and do. He loved magic. He okay. literally would follow me around to each table as I was working before the show started. So in the showroom, as people were getting seated, I was going around doing magic. And at this time, they had the first club was in Pittsburgh. They opened a club in St. Louis, then they opened a club in Knoxville, Tennessee. And so after I'd worked there for a little while, Gerald asked me, he says, hey, could you go down and check on the club for us in Knoxville, Tennessee?
And when you were working there, you were a manager?
I was not a manager. I was just doing magic.
Oh, just, okay.
And so I went down to Knoxville, Tennessee.
Like doing close-up or on the
stage? No, I actually went down in a manager's capacity. They asked me to kind of go down and just, they were having some issues, some problems. Okay. And they asked me to go down and just kind of relay back to them what I saw.
Sure.
And, you know... There was a lot going on that they didn't know about, so that's kind of how I kind of got into the management position. They mm-hmm. let that guy go, and then I started running the club there. I met Brian Gillis when he was living down in Nashville. In Knoxville at the time.
Was he performing at the club?
He would come in on open mic nights and perform.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I bet there were a lot of cool people you know that came through that you of course way back then.
Wow. I mean, you name a comic that, you know, anybody that was working.
Yeah, Jerry Seinfeld, Robin Williams.
Seinfeld, not so much. Robin Williams, he would stop in and do a guest set sometimes if he was in town doing a bigger venue.
Yeah.
But, you know, you had Bill Engvall, Ron White, Dennis Miller, you know, Bruce Baum.
Mm-hmm.
I could just keep naming off comedians. Roseanne Barr, you know, that's when she first got started. You know, so you had these comics that are big names now, household names. Got their start working comedy clubs. And
what were some of your best memories that you have of seeing or working there?
It was just really that whole thing. If getting to be friends with Dennis Miller. One of my favorite comics of all time was Dennis Wolfberg. And
did he do? I don't recall him.
He had kind of big bulging eyes. He was from New York City. He had really curly red hair. And he was just very exaggerated when he would hit his forehead. Can you imagine? You know? And anybody who had seen Dennis Wolfberg, the guy was just one laugh after the other. Absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there was just, you know, it was the 80s.
Well, yeah.
What else do I need to say?
Yeah, things were different back then. They're more accepted, you know. And, you know, that's something I've heard Seinfeld say is that he cannot work. And I've heard other comedians say this, magicians too. They can't work in colleges anymore because everything is so politically correct. And comedy clubs, those that are left, are the last vestiges of where that there are no rules.
I mean, you know, and still some of these clubs I hear are saying, listen, we don't want you to get too politically, you know, we don't want you to do too much politics or whatever, and they're telling them what they can and can't say.
Well, the Magic Castle is that way as well. You know, that before you start, they say no politics of either side because whatever side you're on, there are people who are against it. So leave that out. And that makes perfect sense. I think if you
sure.
want to have a, you know, a civil club and you don't want people arguing after they've had a few drinks in a club, you kind of want to leave out some things.
Sure,
you know?
Absolutely. Well, there were some ground rules set at Magic Live last year, I remember reading on the...
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, you know, when you... You know, about the whole, when the whole sexual Me Too thing was going on.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, so there was that bit, you know, and that probably was a smart thing to do. Set a few ground rules so people wouldn't get, you know, out of step, I guess, to say.
Right.
Keep your hands to yourselves. Right?
Right, that's true. And then you continue to work there at the Funny Bones for how many years?
I was there, I worked for them for about 7 years.
Okay.
And but I worked all over the country. I mean, I was in started in Knoxville, then I was back in St. Louis. I went to Cincinnati, then I went to Dallas, then I opened a club in Minneapolis, And then I went back to Cincinnati. That's the second time back to Cincinnati. I met my wife, mm-hmm. Renee, and who, bless her heart, you know, lets me go out and do these,
yeah,
these lectures and that, and so. But you know, in that meantime, I would go to Columbus. I went to some other cities as well, Omaha, Nebraska, just to kind of go in Atlanta, Georgia, down to right. the, you know. So I was kind of like a floater for these guys, and I was almost. I went to put fires out. I was usually going to clubs that were having problems.
Right.
And so that's, I would go down and see what I could do to maybe bring it back.
Did you meet Pat Hazel along the way, you know, in Omaha, or do you?
Well, I met Pat years ago. We've been friends for a long time. And, yeah. you know, it's one of those guys you don't get to see very often, you know, because Pat's so busy, and this yeah. guy's done so well for himself, you know. Mm-hmm. And but we met, I think the first time we met was at a Midwest Magic Jubilee in St. Louis, mm-hmm. Missouri.
Yeah.
And, you know, and just, you know, the guy's great.
He is.
He's just so great.
I love the guy. I had recorded a podcast in his home in Austin a while back, and had posted that where we had had to break it up into two parts. When he was at Magic Live, then that was kind of his reintroduction, you know, to Magic again. And people are going, where did this guy come from?
Well, what a treat, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I wasn't going to go to Magic Live last year. And when I had found out that he was going to be there.
Oh, did you?
He had told me he was going to be there. Nobody else. This was kind of a surprise thing. People didn't know he was going to be there.
Right.
So I didn't let on to anybody that Pat was going to be there. I didn't want to tell anybody that he was going to be there. But Pat had, on Facebook, had private messaged me and said, hey, just so you know, I'm going to be at Magic Live this year. Nobody really knows I'm going to be there. And I thought, that was really the reason I went.
That's amazing.
You know, we didn't get to hang out much. We hung out quite a bit at Chris Kenner's house, you know, that uh-huh. night when he had the party. And we got to catch up a little bit. And it was just, you know, great talking to him, great seeing him. And, you know, to see somebody that, because he's always been spot on.
Great timing, everything.
You know, and everything. I remember the thing, and he did that at the thing with the little recorder.
Recording?
Yeah, with that, mm-hmm. that whole thing. Remember he did that at the Magic event?
Yep.
Oh, my
yep.
God. That was so hilarious.
It is.
And it still plays well to this day.
Yeah.
You pick a card, hey! You know,
I know, again, we talk about the Magic Castle, Magic Island, I mean, that you had worked there, and that was kind of funny. I didn't remember that you were there for the opening week.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I was the... there's a friend of mine from St. Louis, and Steve Leibovich, and one of his buddies, I guess, was one of the, I don't know if he's a contractor, but he was working on the Magic Island at the time.
Yep.
And so, anyway, it's so long ago. He said, come on out, we'll get you working. And I had no idea. I had no idea that you had to go through Alan Bursky mm-hmm. to do this. And, you know, my apologies to Alan. Because yeah. I show up, I'm in a suit and tie, I'm ready to go. As a matter of fact, we got in the town at like 3 a.m. We went over to because the guy picked us up. We went to the Magic Island.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the Magic Island, and I said, when's this supposed to open? It's opening up tomorrow night. I said, no way. They were still putting carpeting down. Wow. They were still finishing up paint. They were still painting.
Wow.
You know? The Egyptian, they
little
were still
columns and stuff, yeah.
They were still doing all this, and I said, there's no way their grand opening is going to be tomorrow. And sure enough, we went there that night, they were ready to go. I was like, I can't believe this. But when I showed up, I get introduced to Alan Bursky, and Alan Bursky goes, who are you? I didn't book you. And then I was like, I didn't know what to say, but Matt King was there. Chuck Fain was there. Chuck's a good buddy of mine. Mm-hmm. You know, those are guys that played the clubs, too, all the time.
Sure.
You know, Michael Finney, you know, mm-hmm. you know, Kozak, you know, right. name, you know, the amazing Jonathan. All these comics came through. Pat Hazel played the clubs quite a bit in the early years. But, you know, so I show up. Anyway, it all worked out. I ended up working that first week or two, and I never worked it again.
Well, you can always say you were there when, you know,
yeah,
it first
right.
opened. That's
all right.
Very few people can ever say that then for sure. I think it's an interesting story about your getting to work doing the restaurant thing. Now, I think Danny landed that first, didn't he?
Well, there was a gentleman there before him. His name was Cayenne. And so Cayenne worked there a year. That's when the Beaver Creek Chop House was the only chop house open.
Okay.
Then a year later, Brian Nolan opened up the second chop house in Vail. And I think Cayenne mentioned to Brian that, hey, Danny Archer lives in Denver. And so I think Danny came over and auditioned for the job, and he got the gig. And at the time, Danny was just, I think Kyan had already been there 3 or 4 years. Okay. I think 4 years. He was going on his fifth year. And then Kyan decided to move out to L.A. to further pursue his career out in Los Angeles. And so they had an opening in Beaver Creek. And so Danny had been there just a year. Mm-hmm. And then Brian had already talked to 12 or 13 other magicians mm-hmm. prior to me meeting him in St. Louis. And so that's when Danny had mentioned, hey, you might want to come out here and maybe, you know, see if, you know, and that's how it all worked out. So Brian got a hold of me, contacted me, and, you know.
And you kind of immediately struck off.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like, friendship. You know, yeah, so, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you meet somebody for the first time and it's like you've known them your whole life and you've never met this person. That was that, yeah. that was that connection there.
Yeah.
And because, and I think it's because the, not having being a magician in restaurants, but having worked in restaurants my whole life, mm-hmm. you know, so that whole being able to talk in that sense, business, you know, just about, hey, you know, this is what I feel is important. And I think Brian appreciated the fact that, hey, this guy just is not just a magician. He kind of knows the business too.
Yeah.
And so I think that helped also get secure my, I mean, you know, there's always help other places too, you know, but sure. I think that was a big thing. So,
Well, there are just a ton of things I want to talk to you about, really having to do with restaurants, having done them for 25 years on and off myself as well. And you were saying that in the 10 years you were working there, you've learned more.
Yeah, so I've been doing magic 45 years, and I start my 11th year this summer at the Chop House. And I like to say that I've learned more in these last 10 years than I did the previous 35.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say would be some of the biggest lessons or most important thing that you had learned that you could pass on to somebody?
Well, you know, I think it's maturity is uh-huh. what it is, you know. And I've learned that, you know, today it's not all about the magic. It's not about the effect. You know, it's about making the connection mm-hmm. with the audience, you know, and being aware and surrounding, you know, listening to your audience, what they have to say, you know. You know, I get some of my best lines from them, you know. My best lines come from the audience if I listen,
right?
If, you know, so it's the, you know, I'm still
talking about that pointless. That was tell that story,
right? So
funny.
You know, the Gregory Wilson's pointless trick. So the only reason I do this trick is for the line. So I do the bit where I take the pin out. I go, that's north, south, east, and west. So and this so if the pin's pointing east this way, which way would this be? And somebody would say,
West,
right, correct. So I was in New Jersey at Bill Wish and Bob Solari's convention about 7 years ago,
uh-huh.
and I asked this young lady in the front row, if the pin's pointing east this way, which way would this be? And she goes, I don't know, I'm not from around here. I mean, it's like, oh, what, seriously? You know, so had I been more engrossed in the trick itself, yeah. in the outcome of the effect.
You would have gone in one ear and out the other.
I would have gone in one ear and out the other. I would have heard all these magicians laughing and thought, what did I just miss?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I was present.
Right.
I was in the moment with them. I was there. I wasn't doing the trick. I happened to be performing the effect, but I was right there with them as I was performing. So I was able to hear what she said, and then now I use it in my act.
Right. Well, that's one of the things I've heard that Eric Mead does. You've seen Doc, I mean, back when he was at the Tower, and I guess I didn't know if you had seen Eric work back then.
I'd never seen Doc.
Haven't you?
At the Tower. You know, it's funny because years ago when I was 21, mm-hmm. I wanted to move to Colorado and become a bar magician because okay. I had heard about Bob Sheets and Doc East, and that's before Eric Mead started working there.
Okay.
And so I went to the International Bartending Institute.
To learn how to be a bartender.
To learn how to be a bartender.
That's interesting.
So I learned how to, and so I did the course in a week. I forgot, it was supposed to be a two-week course. I crammed it all in a week, mm-hmm. and I passed and learned all these drinks that nobody even drinks today, like a pink squirrel, a grasshopper. You know, nobody drinks that right. anymore. They don't even know what it is. Right. A zombie?
A horse's
you know?
Neck.
Yeah, I mean. Exactly. I mean, bizarre stuff. Yeah. And so anyway, but it didn't come to pass. So I never, that's kind of when I started running the comedy club. A few years later, I started, you know, I was waiting tables at a restaurant one time, Fred Gang's restaurant. And then Bob Kirkwood was in with the manager from Classic Carriage and Car Company. And I waited tables on him that night and I did some magic for him. And Bob's like, hey, we got a restaurant in St. We'd love to hire you to come over and do magic at this restaurant.
Yeah.
So that's how I got some of my gigs. I didn't pursue the restaurant. I just so happened to be waiting tables
right.
and doing magic while I was waiting tables.
Okay.
And so that's how I got into the Classic Carriage and Car Company. Huh. And then I got to the Funny Bone, and then the Funny Bone, I got into management with them from that. And right. then,
but you never really got to go out to pursue that at the Tower, nor getting to see Doc or anybody.
Never to get to see him in that element. Yeah. But mm-hmm. you know, Doc and I get together, we'll get together a couple times a month when I'm out there. Cause he only lives about maybe an hour from where I work at, live at in the Eagle. Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. So he lives in Basalt. Mm-hmm. And, so yeah, I mean it's great. This
where's he working now? What
I think he works at it's the Jerome Hotel, but I think it's the Artisan is okay. where he's at. I believe it's Tuesdays and Thursdays, if I'm not mistaken.
Does he work behind the bar like he did before?
They kind of do a makeshift for him. They make an area for him to perform at, so people come over from the restaurant or if they're in the bar area. That's kind of how I feel. I want to try to go out there this summer and see him work.
I'd like to see that. I've not seen him work really since the Tower had closed. So, but what is the way, how do you approach a table then now?
You know, it's been learned over all these years, you know. I think what's happened is I've gotten comfortable in my own skin. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with Dan, who Dan is today. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it was more of a, I don't want to say insecurity, but, you know, now there's just things that have happened in my life that's changed. You know, one thing I'll say is, you know, when I got sober, everything changed mm-hmm. completely. Hmm. And so, you know, being comfortable in my own skin, being okay with who I am today. And, you know.
And being able to deal with rejection, you said.
Yeah,
too.
And, you know, you go to a table and you don't take offense to it. You're not, you don't get defensive about it, you know. They don't want to see magic. That's great. You know, no problem. I don't get, you know, and some people can be kind of rude about it. I mean, they can be really kind of, mm-hmm. you know, I remember sticking my hand out one time to shake this guy's hand and he just crossed his arms in front of his chest. Hmm. And just, I was just doing this to say hi and welcome to the restaurant.
Yeah.
And he was just, and I had to step back. I had to keep my mouth shut, you know, and restraint of pen and tongue, shall we say. And so I said, oh, that's okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I apologize. And I just thought maybe your kids would like to see a little magic. Mm-hmm. And I walked away and, you know, no big deal. I went on my merry way and did a couple other tables. And I think he saw from watching me, oh, this guy was legit.
He's so okay.
Later that evening, he actually came over to the bar when I was standing there. He apologized to me.
Oh, really?
Okay. He says, "I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to be rude like that." And that's because I didn't take offense to it. I just figured, you know, maybe this guy just had a bad day.
True.
I don't know what's going on. You know, people are on vacation. That doesn't mean they're still not having a bad day.
That's true. And you weren't adversarial to him either.
Absolutely.
To cause a real scene or anything, you know, right then. And so he, I'm sure, would appreciate that and felt kind of bad about that once he realized that you're just not some homeless guy walked in and trying to get some
Yeah, but he looks good. He's in a suit and tie.
Must be doing okay, you know.
That's funny.
So what have you done then as far as changing your approach style?
You know, when I walk up to it, because, you know, I don't wear a tie because it's this real casual restaurant, you know.
You're
but
like
I'm
a vest?
I'm in a jacket, a sport coat and slacks and a dress shirt. So when I walk up to the table, I don't act as though as I'm kind of the manager. You know, if people have already been there before, they know who I am.
Right.
No introduction needed. So, but when I walk up, I'll just say, good evening. Welcome, folks. My name is Dan. Glad you could join us tonight. First time to the restaurant. So I just spark up a small conversation, you know, and then plus it gives you you kind of feel the audience, you feel them out a little bit. Mm-hmm. You can sense that kind of like they want to stay to themselves. Are they engaging in the conversation with me? You know, are they laughing? Are they, you know, so you get a feel of this. And then all, you know, I said, yeah, I've been here 11 years now. And, oh, that's congratulations. That's awesome. I said, yeah, you know, I got a pretty good gig. I work 5 nights a week. 3 hours a night. You know, it's good when you can get it.
Yeah.
And they're like, what do you do? I said, I'm actually, believe it or not, I'm the resident magician. I do magic here. And they'll laugh because they're like, oh, really? You know, I said, no, serious, that's what I do.
Because they think you're the manager.
They think I'm the manager. And they and I say, no, that's seriously, that's what I do. And really? I said, yeah. Then I kind of go into my whole spiel about, you know, where I'm in Vail 1 night a week, Beaver Creek 4 nights a week. And this is when my schedule is this. And yeah, so I kind of go around doing this, and I said, and can you actually believe they pay me to do it? And the reason I say that is because a lot of times if I go up to a table, they might have a family. If they think, because it's a ski resort, they think mm-hmm. everybody's trying to get a tip, right? Mm-hmm. And so my last thing on my mind is the tip. I don't care if the tip, I don't care if I ever make a dime off any of the tables. You know, I'm being paid to be there. Of course, the tip, I do accept tips, but I don't solicit tips. A big difference. And, you know, so if I walk up to a table and I kind of give that soft pedal, and can you believe they actually pay me? It lets them, oh, he's being paid to be here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have to tip him.
Right.
So that's their mindset. I think they think I'm working on tips and that, you know, I expect a tip after that. You know, I don't have expectations. You know, I don't expect a tip. I don't.
But do you have anything in your set as you would close that would indicate that it's okay to accept the tip? In other words, what I do sometimes, before I would leave a table, that I would say, you guys have been really great. You know, this is a busy night. I've got to hit some other tables, so I'm going to do one last thing for you. And the reason I would say that, that cues them to know that, hey, if I'm going to get some money out of my pocket, now's the time to
right.
do it, as opposed to when you're walking away saying, hey, thanks a lot,
sure.
and reaching their pocket, oh, he's already gone. You know,
that's perfect, because, you know, I do the same thing. I'll say, hey, you got time for one more?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So now that's exactly it. You know, it's like, you
if
know,
they're going to give it to you.
Yeah, right. They'll do it then.
Right.
So, yeah, listen, hey, you guys got time for, I've got a couple of, you guys got time for one more?
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great, you know? And so that's not the, yes, not the cue, but, you know, a lot of times they'll ask the service, are we supposed to tip him?
Mm-hmm.
And they're supposed to, listen, it's completely up to you. You know, he's paid to be here, but he does accept tips. So if you'd like to give him a tip, that's fine. And I always mention that to the tables too. You know, I'll say to the, you know, listen, do you accept tips? I said, I do accept tips. I said, but you know, that's not necessary. I said, because the restaurant does pay me to be here. It's part of the dining experience.
Mm-hmm.
This magic is part of the evening. It's
right.
part of your dining experience. I said, but you know, do me a big favor though. The servers work a whole lot harder than I do.
Mm-hmm.
So if they've done a good job for you, make sure you take care of the wait staff. You know,
right.
I always mention that, you know, all of the time, because I think it's important.
Have you ever rejected a tip?
I don't know if I've so much rejected a tip as
I mentioned that because I did once, and it was for a table in which that I had given them my all, you know, basically. And there was a well-dressed lady, and she held a $1 bill between her hands, said, "Do you accept tips?" And I said, "No, thank you. I'm being paid by the restaurant. Thanks very much." I mean, she was, you know, like this $1 was really going to help me a lot. You
but
know?
Maybe she was going to do the $100 bill switch for you. And you, she didn't, you didn't give her the opportunity.
I didn't give her the opportunity to do her magic trick.
That's
yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, a question I'm sure that you're asked frequently is your biggest tip.
Well, you know, it's funny because I'll share that story if you'd like about. So I was on Facebook and these guys are doing, and I won't mention names, but so here's this thread, you know, you see these threads. What's your 10 top favorite albums? Oh, really?
I don't have the kind of time.
Anyway, I don't have the kind of albums, you know? And so
I do like Santana, Abraxas.
I do too. I like Santana too. Steely Dan, you know,
yeah.
Jeff Lober. So I'm reading this thread. What's the biggest tip you ever got? And I'm like, are you kidding me? And so I'm seeing all these things, these stories about the biggest tip they ever got, $600 tip, blah, 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 blah. And then I had this story that I shared on what the biggest tip I ever got was. And, so the biggest tip I ever got, and I know it's going to be hard for most of you to believe this, but the biggest tip I ever got, believe it or not, was $1. $1. That was the biggest tip I ever got. However, the reason it was the biggest tip I ever got is that I was performing at a table, and I look out of the corner of my eye, and I see this little girl walking over to the table. Now, often what happens is that once you've left the table, the parents will give the money to the kid.
Mm-hmm.
To walk over to the table and say, here, my daddy wants you to have this.
Right.
So, and this basically says to the table you're performing at, oh, he accepts tips.
Because
a lot of times they don't know if you do or not. So that's a good way that they're queuing for you, that
right.
you take tips. So this little girl walks over and she says, I look, oh, hi, sweetheart, how are you? And she goes, hi, remember me? I said, I sure do. You were sitting right over there and I waved to the parents. And she goes, I really liked your magic a lot. And she opened up her own little purse and pulled $1 out. And she goes, this is for you. That's why that was the biggest tip I ever got. Because it came from the heart. You mm-hmm. know, it was heartfelt. And it was a little 5-6-year-old girl with her own little purse and gave me $1 of her own money.
Yeah.
That to her is $1,000.
Sure.
you know?
That's amazing.
And so that you know, that just kind of was a tear. And the people at the table were like, oh, isn't that so sweet?
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's just, you know, however, if it's a little boy that comes over mm-hmm. and gives me the tip as he's walking away, I'll say, I'll see you at home, son.
Yeah, as if it's on cue.
Right, know, exactly. To, yeah, they follow me around all night in the restaurant. I give them, so, you know, and I'll tell you, somebody said that one time, this is pretty clever. I don't do this, but occasionally somebody said they would give a server a 50.
Yeah.
And if the magician felt that this was a bunch of high rollers at this table, the server would come over and say, oh, excuse me, folks, Dan, table number 12 would like to see you. And she would hand me the 50.
Yeah.
Tell them I'll be over in just a few minutes, mm-hmm. you know. And so now this table sees
right.
that table 12 just gave me a $50 tip, which they didn't.
Right.
But it's just, I don't do anything like that. I just think that's a little over the top, but it's a pretty clever way of.
I have not heard that ploy, but I can see that working.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, because, you know, it's almost like it's a, I haven't been to that table yet, but they want you to come over. Here's.
Right.
You know, and she's holding it up so they can see it's a 50. Mm-hmm. That happened one night at the Chop House in Beaver Creek.
Yeah.
So this guy comes over to the table from another table. He says, hey, Dan. Oh, hey, Jeff, how you doing? He holds out a $50 bill in front of this table. He says, hey, could you stop over in a little bit? Listen, I got a few other. No, come over when you can. I put it in my pocket. And he held it up so they could see it was a 50.
Yeah.
I ended up getting a 50 from the table I was at. So it was almost like, that does work.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of crazy. You know?
Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. You know, I have gotten tips or no tips from the most unexpected places. So I've gotten to the point, kind of like with you, you don't work for tips. You know, if it comes fine, if it doesn't fine, because like with you, I've had tables in which it looks like that they can't rub two nickels together and pay for their dinner, and they tip me well. And others who are well dressed, like that lady, you know, here's a dollar bill for
right.
it, kind of a thing, who I know can plainly afford a lot more. So you really don't know. And so, a perfect example you were just talking about there. I went over. It was towards the end of the evening, and there was an older gentleman, obviously a grandfather with his grandson. You know, just the two of them at the table. And I was about finished. It was getting to be about, I don't know, 9 o'clock, and I was off at 9. So I thought, well, I'll go and do about 5 or 10 minutes, you know, for him. And there was nobody else over there, and it was getting late, so I did. And I did about 3 tricks, and he said, thank you, and handed me a $100 bill. You know, it's like, I should have spent more time there, you know, with them. You just don't know. I was not expecting. I was just like, I got to go, but I want you to have a good time. And he
right.
said, you really entertained me, and you made my day. You know, it's time with spending my grandson, and we're having a great time today, and this was really a capper. Wow.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, you really just don't know.
And again, it's not about the tip.
Right.
You made their night.
That's what he said. Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, I've tried different methods of, you know, trying to, we talk about approaching the table and coming up that I have learned a long time ago also, when you're going to be saying, I've heard the story of people, you know, if you lose a white knife, a black knife or whatever, somebody saying, yes, I did, and taking it from him and put it in their pocket. That's happened, you know,
right.
not to me, but I've heard that
right.
some magicians that happened. Or also that if you go up and, you know, did someone lose a change, his change purse or whatever? Nope. And then they keep going back to their, they're not looking at you like that's a quizzical thing to,
sure.
to see. Or you would never ask, do you want to see some magic? Because that's an open-ended question, which is a yes or no answer.
Right.
And that is 50-50, you know. So you want to, I always say when you approach a table to just as you do of, are you having a good time this evening? You know, how's everything okay? And they're just as you're doing now, nodding yes, you know.
Right.
And so you get an affirmation, and everyone is, and they're wondering, who is this person? Is he the manager? And so you kind of engage them in conversation, but you get them thinking and giving affirmations that everything is fine. And then you say, well, the management has asked me to come over and entertain you, you know, with some magic. So let me show you something. And then I quickly do, you know, my 10-second trick or something that's going to be a flash opener or
sure,
something,
right,
you know.
Right.
So this way that they know you're a magician, and also that they're ready to see it because, again, they're already saying yes, you know.
Right.
But I think it's important to engage people in conversation and to get them saying yes before that they have a chance to say no.
Right. That's very smart. That's mm-hmm. very good. Occasionally, like if it's a group of men, sometimes I'll like say businessmen.
Yeah.
I'll walk up and I'll have the firewall in my left hand.
Yep.
And I'll just walk by the table and I'll look down on the floor and they'll see me doing that. I'll reach down like I'm picking the wallet up off the floor. And I'll say, gentlemen, I was just curious. I work here at the restaurant. Did any of you lose this little wallet? I just found it down here on the floor. And everyone starts patting their pockets like, everyone's like, oh, no. And I said, I'm just curious. And then I do the fire wallet with it.
Mm-hmm.
So
it gets their attention.
Yeah, it gets their attention. But I don't say anything. I say, are you sure nobody lost this? And I just put it away. Well, I'll let the management know I found this. And I just walk away and like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
what was that?
Yeah.
So now they're like, what was that all about? Mm-hmm. We don't have our wallet. We have our wallets, but who was that guy?
Yeah.
And so now I'll say to the server, I said, if you go on back, when you go back later, ask him if you want me to stop back by and do a little.
That's an interesting ploy. Rather than saying you're a magician, you just kind of do a magic effect.
Yeah, without saying anything and just walk away.
Let them kind of think about it. I hadn't thought about that. That's an interesting thing. You know, I have used a fire wallet a lot, but I find, like in cocktail parties and strolling and everything, that, and probably the tables also, if there are men versus all women,
right,
that they have two different mindsets. And I think you have to be aware of that. And I find that if I'm doing, I always use the Hundy 500.
Oh, yeah.
For men. Because I'll talk to them about, hey, you guys, gamble, get to Vegas from sometimes you and start talking about money, or you invest in money, that they're nicely dressed, in a cocktail party or something. And the stock market's been going pretty good. And so, hey, you can, if you invest in this and change from one to hundreds and whatever kind of a thing. Whereas at ladies, that if I come over and I say, oh, you got a hair out of place, you got a hair on your shoulder, and I just reach over and pluck a little sponge rabbit, say, oh, that's cute. And they start giggling. And then I go into sponge bunnies. So I do sponge bunnies as an opener for ladies,
uh-huh,
and the Hyundai 500. And, I think, again, you have to know who your audience is.
Oh, sure. It helps.
Mm-hmm. And when you got children, is there something that you go to the children first to try to get them, or do the
whole
table?
I don't like kids. Never have, never will.
Like them with salt and little fava beans.
That's right.
Yeah.
No, it's funny. My wife and I have never had kids. We've always had dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But I do love kids. I mean, kids are great. Mm-hmm. But, I have this kind of gruff way I handle the kids, and it's almost like I give them permission to pick on me.
Yeah.
Because it's like I'm a kid too.
Yeah.
And so there's this camaraderie I have with these kids, and they, when they come back,
mm-hmm,
and they know they're going to have fun with Dan.
Yeah.
And because it is a fun time. It's not something, not this guy again. But maybe when they become teenagers, it's like that.
Right.
Oh, we're busy on our iPhones. Everybody's on their iPhone, like this audience right now.
Do you do a phone trick?
No,
them?
I just got my first smartphone.
That's right. We just talked about that. One of the things that I've been doing for a long time since Danny Garcia came out with that was where that you put their cell phone in the balloon, basically. Pressure, I think, is the trick name, in which that if I see, one of the millennial kids, is starting to kind of, not millennials, but I mean they're teenagers, are starting to wane interest or whatever that I'm doing, because I'm trying to involve them, and they do, but then whenever I start doing something, for the grown-ups, and they might turn their attention, or
sure,
they're fiddling with their phone, I'll say, let me see that for a minute, then I'll blow up the balloon, put it inside there, and then have somebody call them, so that way their phone rings while you see it inside the balloon.
Right.
It's a great little trick. The point is that you're kind of, using technology, and there are, of course, a lot of apps you can do and use their phones with today. So I think it's important that you kind of are listening to what your audience is saying and doing, and incorporate their actions into your performance. If they say something, they're talking about their dog or something, you whenever you say sign a card or put the name of your dog on there or something, that it personalizes it.
Did you hear about the newest app they have out?
What's that?
It lets you know that the lights turn green. Yeah.
More people should have that app. Yeah, instead of listening for the honk behind them.
Right. The phone should honk at them.
Yeah, that's right.
Move it.
That means move. Yes, the light is now green. That's right. Another thing we were talking about had to do with gift magic, and mm-hmm, whether that's one way of soliciting tips by leaving things with people. And I know, like in restaurants where I worked, I remember there was a fellow who was doing some balloon animals, and one of the other magicians who was working there was saying, don't do that, because then they'll want us to, they'll start hiring clowns and balloon twisters. They don't need magicians, because that's taking time also, and that's entertaining them, certainly.
Sure.
But the main reason, obviously, that he's twisting balloons is because I'm assured of getting a tip. Well, that, or again, he's working for tips, not for the fun of the evening or whatever. Depends on how bad off you are and why, what what is your reason for wanting the job? But what are your thoughts about that kind of thing, about balloons or any kind of gifts that you give?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the one thing I give away now, and it was just as an afterthought when I first did it, is I do the multiplying rabbits. Mm-hmm. And then it's the Goshman rabbits, the small little red ones.
Yeah.
And I give those away to the kids at the table. Mm-hmm. Just as, here, would you like a rabbit? And I remember the first time I do that, the mom's like, oh, isn't that so sweet? Mm-hmm. You know, so, yeah, so I gave the rabbits away. And it wasn't for the tip. It's just, it's a nice gesture for the restaurant. Plus, I'm the ambassador for the restaurant.
Sure.
But they remember that little 12-cent rabbit. Mm-hmm. And I literally buy the rabbits by the thousands. I just bought 1,000 for the summer.
Wow.
So I probably give away, throughout the whole year, I probably give away 3,000 rabbits.
Wow.
Every year, maybe a little more. It just depends on how busy the seasons are.
Right.
And, you know, so it's, but it pays for itself.
Well, you agree that the rabbit trick is a great trick.
It's one of my least favorite tricks to perform.
Least favorite?
Yep.
Really?
Quite honestly, it is. It's not that I don't like the trick. Mm-hmm. But it's one of the layman's favorites.
Correct.
You know, it's one of because it's in their hands. Yeah. I mean, and it is. It's the reaction you get from it. And my routine is real simple. It's right to the point. I don't get anything fancy with the, you know, one on my hand, one in your hand. You know, it's a real simple routine. But it gets a great reaction.
Yeah.
And
do they anticipate the end? Sometimes.
I don't know so much if they do or not. I mean. You know, if you walk into a restaurant and there's like 1,000 cards in the ceiling, guess what? They know the ending to the trick already.
That's true. Because they say, what are those cards all about?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You know, little kids, I mean, it's like I mess with kids, you know. It's like some kid will say, well, you know, I know how you do that trick. I said, it doesn't matter. I've already been paid, you know. Or I'll say to the kid, he'll say something and I'll say, and I'll look at the parents and say, hey, did you know the Titanic sinks? Spoiler alert. You know, messing with the kids, you know, it's just like, you got to be kidding me. And so that's what I do with the kids. I just have fun with them, you know.
Yeah. And so again, you would give out like, I think it's important to give out something then as well that I do
I love your idea with that. The card from Mona Lisa Secret.
Yeah, Mona Lisa. Yeah, that I will give those out because I had those printed up. Those of you who are familiar with that, with Card Shark's Mona Lisa Secret, where that the final card actually has my website on the bottom of it, so that I can give that out. And I have a little easel that it sits on, and if it's a potentially good client, I'll give them the easel as well. But like whenever I do this in people's homes and I'm you know, hired to work a home party,
sure,
and I'm doing some strolling, I'll do it for the owner, and I'll say, keep it. And, you know, that'll look good on your piano right over there.
Right, yeah.
And I'll come back a year later and it's still there. You know?
It's a talk piece, you know.
It is a conversational piece.
People come in, what's this?
That's right. And then they tell a story.
Yep,
and of course, I've just blown out of proportion, you know, which reminds me, years ago, Dan Garrett was telling me that, remember Cardiographic, you know, the rising card.
Oh, yeah.
Cartoon thing of Martin Lewis, is that he had done that at someone's home and he came back a year later and they had framed it and put it in the foyer by the front door when you come in. Now, he said, I don't know if they put that up just whenever I was coming in or if that was up all year long so they could tell the story.
Right. That's funny.
Other things that you can give away. One thing that I do is give away is, it's even cheaper yet than what yours are those little fortune-telling fish that roll up in your hands, you know, those little cellophane things, basically.
Where Chinese do you get those
fortune tissue. Something like Southern Trading Company. I think if you do a search for fortune-telling fish, you can find it. You buy them by the gross to begin with that are in this little thing, and it's like, I don't know, a buck for a gross of them or something, you know, or very cheap. And you might find them some stores around town, depending on how large your city is or something.
Fortune-telling fish.
Yeah, fortune-telling fish. And so after I'm finished, that I will just hand these out to every, you know, kid that and teenager, you know, also who's there. And it is costing you pennies. I mean, it is something that is, again, gift magic, like that Jeff McBride would talk about, in which that, or you know, I would say kind of like what AJ would say in The Art of Schmoozing. It's just a little tchotchke, just something that you're giving to somebody and without any expectation of anything being in return.
Right.
Because
sure.
Yeah, but what? And then I explained. I said, take it out and you put it in your hand. Now, Tom Peterson, I think, has a little trick with that also, in which you have a card selected or a force card, you know, basically, and you have a face down. And you put their hand on top of the card upside down, and you put the fish in their hand. And as it starts to curl, say, oh, it's curling up. You know, that means it's a red card. It looks like a tail, you know, is wiggling a little bit. That means it's a low card. It wiggled three times. I think it's a three of diamonds. Turn it over to three of diamonds, you know, kind of a thing. So it's like a fortune-telling fish. Not only it tells your fortune, but it tells, you know, predicts the card, you
sure.
know, kind of a thing. And say, yeah, just practice with that, you know, and then leave the table and let them kind of play
That's
with
funny.
It. I don't know how that works, you know. Kind of a thing. And another thing that we discussed, and I think is very important, has to do with pocket management. Tell me how that you arrange your pockets. And does it change all the time? Do you have the same setup and doing the same set every night, I mean, or what?
Pretty much the setup's always the same in my pockets. It's always the same. And because it's so important, I think, anybody that works in restaurants or does any type, even trade shows, you know, I'm sure you look at a trade show worker, everything's where it needs to be for that next show when it comes along, and their table's all set up, you know, arranged the way it's supposed to be, so they don't have
right.
to think about what's going to, where everything is.
Right.
And so that was so important for me is that, and that was just developed over the years. I remember when I was like maybe 17 years old, I saw George Schindler lecture in St. Louis. George is, you know, just a great guy. And, you know, really, he's, you know, one of
those.
The
dean of the SAM.
The dean. I mean, he's, you know, he's been around. George knows a lot. And I feel bad I haven't spoken to him in a while. I should need to give him a call, see how he's doing. But in his lecture, he was talking about pocket management, about, you know, it's important that you know where everything is. And here I am, a teenager, going, I don't care about this stuff. What does that matter? How important is that? I want to see a trick.
Yeah.
You know? And then here I am years later realizing that everything that you hear these pros, professionals, people who make their living doing it, they were spot on. You know, and but you know, you're 17, 18 years old. I've got bigger and better things to do, you know. So but now it's come full circle that it's like, yep, I totally get it, and it is so important, you know. I remember Johnny Thompson saying that he knew exactly where every single laugh came, where people applaud, everything that the and I was like, how can somebody possibly know that? Well, now that I've worked thousands and thousands and thousands of tables, I totally get what he was saying. I know. So the pause is so important. You know, you pause, you know, you don't want to interrupt the laughter, the applause, you know, you want to pause and let them, you know, get it out. So yeah, it's just all been learned, you know, so the pocket management is just, it's so important because literally as I'm performing, I'm resetting every single pocket as I'm performing. As I'm going in for one trick, I'm loading a card back into my pocket to take out another trick, you know, the put and take. But I'm doing it so it's reset. So when I go to that next table, the only thing I have to do is maybe move a few cards around on the deck, which we talked about that earlier. You can just do that standing right at the table, just talking, you know, shooting the breeze with them, you know.
I think that's what's important is that you're going to be doing that so that it doesn't seem that anything is taking place, that it's a smooth transition and you're having a conversation with them about that trick or whatever it is, just having a conversation basically.
Sure.
And by doing that, it gives you all the time in the world to reset that deck of cards, you know, for the next table because you don't want to take time away between tables, particularly if a waiter said, hey, you know, this table's waiting for you over here, for you to go back in the kitchen and reset, you know, and put this back in a Cy Stebbins or whatever after you've shuffled it, and you just don't have the time to do that, you know.
Right.
And I don't think that you'd have time really to, if you had a half dozen decks of cards, to go back and grab another deck. Well, yeah, I guess you could.
Sure.
But it takes time to go and get that and come back. I mean, you don't have that many pockets that's available, you know, to have a half dozen pockets to pull out another deck, you know, for to get ready for the next one, you know, miracle. Maybe some people do, but anyhow, I just think that it's important that you know where that your things are, you know, in the right time.
Sure.
And then and what about audience management? I mean, I know that you do like Professor's Nightmare a little bit differently than a lot of people do, and you got a nice routine with that, but it is big thick ropes as opposed to using string. I mean, when you're at a table, people can see that, but I mean,
sure.
This is like a stage trick you're doing like at a table,
right? Yeah, you know, when I saw that big fat white rope years ago, I thought, oh my, I gotta have this. Mm-hmm. This is so visible, you know, and it is. It's from a distance. It's great on stage, but for close up, it's perfect for me at least because it's so striking. You know, it's wow, it's bold. It's just mm-hmm. that big, bright white rope. And you know when you let the audience handle the ropes and they look at it and they're checking it out, you know they're involved. You know they're part of that effect.
Do you just store that in your top it or something, or where do you keep something?
I keep those ropes in my left hand jacket pocket,
outside jacket pocket.
Yeah, the outside jacket pocket. Yeah,
I mean those are pretty big, thick, heavy ropes. So oh, yeah. Give some bulk to your jacket, I think.
Yeah, and those are cord, so there's no center to it, so they're pretty light.
Okay,
you know as rope go, and so yeah, it just goes in my jacket pocket. Outside jacket pocket.
Mm-hmm. And the tip you'd given us also here this evening was where to get the rope. Because I used to get them from Cameron Academy out of Canada, and they had gone belly up some years ago, and I think that someone else had bought that out. But they're kind of low on stock, I believe, than now. But you said where can they go?
It's Baronian Trading Company. Baronian. Baronian Trading Company.
Okay.
And so, it's you can buy it. You can buy it by the hank. Mm-hmm. There's three different sizes. You can get three different gauges. You get a quarter knot, and then and they sell it by the spool also. So you can buy like 300-foot spool.
That's why to get it.
And that's how I buy it. I buy mm-hmm. 300-foot spools at a time. You know.
And that's a pretty good gauge that you use about the size of your little finger.
Yeah,
or something.
I can't remember. I think it's 15 gauge. I think.
Mm-hmm. And that's cord or not?
It's cord.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's no
center.
No
thing.
Center. Yeah. Yeah.
And I noticed that you also prepare the ends of your rope the way that I do as well. Do you stick like a pencil down there to?
Yeah, I just take like a fork and just kind of bend the fork. You know, Justin Willman showed me the routine years ago. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of tuck it in. You know, if you got a sharp, pointy area, you know, you just kind of work it around as you go through. Mm-hmm. And whatever you can do to get the ends in.
The frayed ends into the middle of the rope.
And you just poke it in, yeah.
And then, that's what I was doing. And then, like, with a pencil, and then poke it, like, down about 2 or 3 inches in there. So that way it keeps it from unwrapping,
right.
From fraying, you know, basically.
Afraid not.
Yeah. Have you ever had people who have said that the ends look funny and they think there's something to do with the ends?
No.
Okay.
Some people think it's like magnets. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. my. Seriously?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had people who have looked at my rope before and said, there's something funny about that. Well, it's just the way I keep the ends from, you know, fraying. That's enough. But I have had a couple of people in the performances from the years I've been doing this actually inspect the end of it, thinking that's...
I've had people pull them out.
Because they're... Have you really?
Yeah. Wow. I said, don't do that. It took me forever to get those tucked in there.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. It's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well, they are visible enough and something in a restaurant walk-around thing that would attract attention.
Oh, sure. And people at other tables can see it, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you've been doing the ring on rope as well for a long time.
Right,
because you already got the rope out there. Then you do the rings.
Sure.
And then later the ninja rings.
Right. Yeah. Ninja rings. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Is ninja rings something you've been doing for a long time?
Yeah. Pretty long time, I guess. You know, Mr. Yanagita taught me the routine. And... I remember seeing that for the first time. I thought it was real magic. I couldn't believe that I was watching the linking ring routine because I was literally fooled by it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought there was a different. I thought they were, you know, where are they getting these rings at? There's something mm-hmm. we don't have yet here in the United States. I want a set. And then Mr. Yanagita laughed. He goes, oh, no, it's just a key ring, a single, and a double. I was like, are you kidding me? I can't believe this. And then he taught me the routine.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, he gave me permission to share it and teach the other magicians.
Yeah, I remember Shutagawa talking about this years ago, in which that there are different levels of performances of that. I think at different levels of ninja about how good that you are. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I'm sure. You know, really, Keiko does the routine better than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
She's over in Japan. And if you ever have a chance to see her perform the routine, she was actually at Magic Live last year.
Was she?
Yep. She was there with a few of her friends. And we hadn't seen each other in years. I think the last time I saw her was, maybe it was at the Magic Castle one time, but it was at Mr. Yanagita brought me, Steve Fierson, and Curtis Cam over for his magic convention in Japan.
In Japan, wow.
Yeah, years ago. It was in Shibuya.
Mm-hmm.
And I met Keiko there. And when she performed the routine, I was like, oh my God, she's better than Mr. Yanagita is. Sorry, Mr. Yanagita.
And was she a student of his?
Yep, she was a student of his.
And
too.
She succeeded.
She was really good. I mean, she is still really good. Mm-hmm. And but you know, there's a lot of guys out there. Hede does an incredible close up. You know, you see some of these guys. You know, it's like, what the heck is going on?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love to be fooled. I don't want to catch anything, you know. When I watch another, you know, because layman will ask that. So when you watch other magicians, are you trying to catch them? Can you see what they do? I said, well, if they're that bad, yeah, I can see what they're doing. Yeah. Anybody can. You can, you know. But, you know, I like to sit back, relax, and just watch the show.
Right.
You know, take it all in, you know. I saw the Evansons for the first time at the House of Cards. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what the heck just happened? What's going on here? Yeah. What's happening?
Yeah. They're from another planet.
I thought she was real.
Yeah, yeah. I just love the way that they do their act from the standpoint that they're both talking at the same time, you know, talking over each other. And so that's what I think is a real fooler. You know, I just saw Tommy Tan and Emily, the clairvoyants, perform recently, and I love them, and they do a great act.
That's what I've heard.
Oh, it is. I mean, from start to finish, that it is stellar. So anyhow, you've been doing restaurants for a long time. Any other advice that you can give people who are looking to find a restaurant where they could go and work? I mean, locally?
To the young kids, get a college education first.
Good advice.
Yeah, get a college education. And it's something you can use. You know, it's like Dennis Wolfberg used to say. He was a school teacher. You know, he goes, I used to teach school in the Bronx. What do you teach a kid in the Bronx? How to write a plea bargain? A ransom note? Something they can use later in life? You know? You know, really working in restaurants, you know, it's amazing to me how long I've been doing this, how many people have never seen a magician ever, seen a magician live.
Right.
Which they see him on television,
sure,
but they've never seen him live. And then to see him in a restaurant, people are just like, well, this is weird. I've never seen this. This is people that don't know.
Right.
So I think, and I've been working in restaurants for a long, long time. I say, somebody said, you start at the top. Go to. I mean, it depends. If you want to do kid shows, then you find a family restaurant to work in. You know, if you want to do corporate events, you know, work in a high-end restaurant. If you can get into a high-end restaurant.
That's a difficult thing.
It is a difficult thing, you know. You almost have to have an end to get in.
That's true.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think like with Eugene Berger when he worked, you had to invite him to your table.
Yes.
You know, it was an invite. Eugene didn't go to the table. He was invited to the table. This past winter, there was a table that came in. It was all guys. And it was a party of 14, actually. And their first thing they ordered when they sat down, they ordered $1,800 worth of wine.
Wow.
Two big magnums of wine. Talked to the server, and I said, Anthony, I said, listen, let's do this with this table. I'm not going to go over to that table and do my spiel. I said, why don't you, once you get a feel of what's going on in the course, they get their meals in, they've chit-chatted about, go, because they saw me doing magic at another table, say, you know, we have a house magician that's here, he's been working here for X, but give him the spiel and say, would you like him to stop over and do some magic? So it was an invite.
And so they did. They asked.
Yeah. They basically, he said, would you like me to have the magician come over to your table? Oh, yeah, we'd love to have him come over. So that was an invitation. You know,
right.
they invited me. He had said, yeah, would you like that? Because every now and then, if I get a feel of a table, I'll say, why don't you go over and see if the table wants me to. And mostly I'm usually right. They didn't want to see magic. You know, but it's funny, you were talking earlier about the tip thing, you know. Sometimes the tables you wouldn't think want to see the magic are the ones that want to see you so bad. It's like, I would have never guessed that.
Right. You know, exactly.
Yeah. So, contempt prior to investigation, right? And so, it's funny because, and it worked out really well. And so I tell a lot of times servers, if I see a table, they're I don't want to call them high rollers, but they're spending a lot of money. Their bill that night, I think, was a little over $5,000, and they left the server a huge tip.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Huge tip.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
A lot of money.
Yeah.
Wow. Certainly amazing. You know, I had many years ago also made like table tents in which I had my name and picture and said, you know, if you want to see some magic, you know, I'm the house magician, please ask your server.
Right.
Zero. Zero. Had nobody. I mean, I'm sure they saw those table tents, you know. And I actually, after waiting for about a half hour and no waiter ever came to me, I started going around to all the tables, regardless whether they asked for me or not.
Right.
So I didn't find that that would work. I heard some people have used methods in which they'll have like a little magic menu saying, here are some things, you know, that this is, you know, for the vanishing ring trick is going to be, you know, $1, you know, or $5 if you want to see this trick. And they kind of named, you know, they made up some names that sounded kind of mysterious. They weren't actually, you know, ring flight or anything like that, like naming a trick. And it's like, well, I want to see this trick, you know. I don't know if that ever really worked or not, but I heard somebody...
I heard it too.
Have you seen... Yeah, okay. Yeah. That just seemed like such a bogus idea.
Yeah, I just... Yeah, you're like asking for money up front.
Exactly, yeah. You're going to come to the table and show me this. It sounds interesting. Yeah, it's not going to happen. Yeah. Anyhow, any other interesting stories or something you want to, before we kind of close over here, as far as years that you have entertained some people where there's been a good experience or a bad experience that sticks out?
I just love that story about those two kids, the brother and the sister and the father.
Okay.
I mean, it's so funny. I mean, it's just, you know, so I go up to this table and there's this little girl and a little boy, brother and sister, and the dad, the mom was back at the hotel. And I walk up and I'm doing my little spiel and I say, yeah, I'm the magician. I work here. And I look, do you like magic? To the little girl. She goes, I love magic. And I looked at the son, the brother. I said, do you like magic? He goes, yeah, it's okay. He's like 7 years old. I said, that's the same reaction I get from my wife. So I said to the dad, do you mind if I do a couple things for you? And so he says, fine. So before I started doing magic, I said to the little boy, I said, how old are you? He goes, I'm 7 years old. I said, really? I said, it looks like you could be in first grade. He goes, I'm in kindergarten. And his sister goes, again? I was like, oh, my God. I couldn't even – I was literally doing everything I could to not laugh my butt off. And I said to the dad, I said, you'll have to excuse me for a couple of minutes. I got to go get a drink of water or something. I'll be back. And I said, I just started walking away. I mean, I couldn't stop laughing. And then I finally came. I couldn't keep a straight face the whole time I worked for him.
Yeah.
And finally, the little boy was pretty cool. He ended up liking the magic, but it was just like the whole time I was just like shaking my head, going, "Oh my God, I'm going to start busting out laughing," you know. But that whole again, oh my God. That's what I love. What I do, you know, just the stuff you hear from these kids is hilarious.
It's unexpected. Yeah, it's kind of like Art Linkletter's kids say the darndest things.
Right. Exactly.
You never know.
It's crazy.
But there again, as we said from the very beginning, that you have to be open to listening to your audience.
Sure.
And not just come in, hey, bang, 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 I'm the magic guy, and then go to the next table. You're actually engaging with them, so that's important.
Well, the one joke I like starting out with kids, I walk up to the kids and I'll say, you guys want to hear a joke? And they'll say, yeah. I said, two drunks walk into a bar. I'm just kidding. I don't do that, of course. No. But
well, I thought that was funny that you would say to a kid, though, that how old are you and whatever it is, say, boy, what was that? How long is it that seemed... boy, it gets there fast, doesn't it? Or what was that?
Oh, yeah. So I'll walk up to a kid and I'll say, so how old are you? I'm 6 years old. I said, it goes by fast, doesn't it? I said, it just goes by really fast. And the kid, and I had this kid goes, it sure does. It really does. Just like he was an adult, I was like, okay, whatever. I looked at the parents and said, you get a lot of this at home? He's like that all the time. I said, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Good luck to you.
Well, as we do start to wrap up, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and so I'm always curious, what is it that is your philosophy of life? What is it that you live by? It doesn't have to be a word, it's a phrase.
Oh, my gosh. Boy, don't take life too seriously, you know?
Good.
Live one day at a time, you know, and that's it. I try to stay in the middle of the boat. I try to stay in the present today. You know, I'm not too concerned about tomorrow. You know, today I had a wonderful day. We got to spend some time together.
Yeah.
You know, it's not often we get to see one another. Well, in passing, we see each other at conventions, and we'll say hi, and we'll chat for a little while. And, you know, so it's the friendships we make over the years that, you know, I really cherish. And, you know, I just, you know, just today, man. Tomorrow's another day.
That's why it's called a present, because it's a gift.
That's it. Exactly it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Dan, thank you very much. I appreciate
Scott, thank
sharing
you so
some
much.
Time
it's
with
been
us.
A real pleasure.
Indeed, mine. It's over the Magic Word Podcast. That was Dan Fleshman. This is Scotty out. Well, thank you, Dan. That was just a lively conversation. I just had a great time, and boy, that hour went by so quickly. I appreciate every time and every moment that I have to spend with you, and I hope that you listeners enjoyed that as much as I did. I'm sure you did, and you can probably go back and listen to that a second time as well. A lot of little gems in there, too. Some great advice if you're thinking about working a restaurant or you already do. Lots of things to pick up. So thanks again, Dan, for your time and your words of wisdom. Well, I mentioned also at the beginning of this that we were going to be having a contest, and I want to thank Dan also for the two DVD sets that he is giving away, allowing us to give away on this podcast. So if you'll go to themagicwordpodcast.com for this episode, number 530, that at the bottom of the page on that particular blog, there is a form that you'll fill out. All you need to do is put in your name and your email address, and boom, you're done. And if you don't subscribe to the pod letter, all you have to do is that actually will start to subscribe you automatically, but you have to opt into that, I believe, as well. So it's not something that you automatically get put onto a subscriber list of some sort if you don't want to. But nevertheless, that's what you do. Just go over there and enter that. And we're going to let that run for a couple of weeks. I found that that's the best way to give the most people the best opportunity in order to be able to enter a contest. So it'll run for a couple of weeks. And those two winners' names will be drawn on Wednesday, the 20th November, and announced the next day in the podcast for November 21st, which, by the way, happens to be my birthday, which would be a good opportunity in case you were thinking of giving a pledge to the Magic Word podcast and becoming a friend of the Magic Word. Hint, hint. There you go. So go out and enter the contest today. And if you happen to be overseas and your name is drawn, then I will contact you and let you know what the postage is going to be. And if you're willing to pay the foreign postage, then I will send that to you. Otherwise, that this is going to be restricted just to those who are within the U.S. But again, you can enter wherever in the world, but keep in mind that you'll be required to pay the postage. And it's still worth it, even if the postage is $20 or more, because the DVDs are worth $50. So, and a lot of really good material on here then as well. So, be sure and go and enter that contest. Sign up for our newsletter, that is our pod letter, as I like to call it. And until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember, don't take life too seriously, but live in the moment. This is Scotty out, not Scotty Allen or Scotty L.